This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen and Noel Lim. 7:37 a.m. Thursday, the 24th of September. And before we get into our next story, a quick look in about half an hour, we're going to be having the Breakfast Grill where, Noel, you're going to be speaking with Dato' Murli Manokaran of Aspen Group.
Yeah, so they are listed on the Singapore Catalyst Board. It is a Penang-based developer. They developed part of Batu Kawan. So now they are venturing into rubber glove making together with Tan Sri Chua Mayu, prominent businessman. An investor, think of St. Regis Hotel and Residence. He's the developer behind that, Tan Sri Chua Mayu. So I think the question really is, people are just jumping on the bandwagon for rubber glove making. So will the venture pay off or will it miss the boat?
All right, so that's going to be happening after the 8 o'clock news bulletin. Be sure to stay tuned. But now we're looking at an international story that has been making waves in the banking industry lately. In fact, the global banking industry is under fresh scrutiny because this is following the leaking of documents which showed that more than $2 trillion in transactions were processed by banks despite being flagged as possible money laundering or other criminal activity. Now, these transactions occurred, they're historical, between the years 1999 and 2017.
The trove of documents known as the FinCEL files were leaked to BuzzFeed, which shared information with the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, or the ICIJ, and their media affiliates who combed through the data. It was a trove, so it was a lot of data. And some of the findings were published this week, and the revelations raised a lot of questions about why banks didn't act on these suspicious activities reported.
Now, Asian banks were not spared the scrutiny. Journalists uncovered that Singapore and Hong Kong were the biggest destinations for suspect transactions in Asia. And meanwhile, closer to home, Malaysia Kini reported that 9 Malaysian banks were flagged as facilitating suspicious transactions worth more than $18 million. So to help us better understand how banks are supposed to deal with suspicious activity, we speak this morning to Thorsten Beck, Professor of Banking and Finance at the Business School, formerly CAS, of City University of London. Thorsten, thank you so much for joining us. Now, first off, how significant are the FinCEN file leaks compared to previous financial leaks like the Panama Papers or the Paradise Papers?
So this at a somewhat different level, because the Panama Papers or the Paradise Papers or similar funds basically refer to offshore holdings by individuals or by firms, whereas these leaks are more about the transactions undertaken. Some of them are actually linked to the holdings, to the offshore holdings. You can kind of see it as we got the dots on the map with the previous leaks, the Panama Papers, the Paradise Papers. Now we basically got the connections between the different dots and how these...
Now, the FinCEN leaks showed that the banks waved through payments despite also filing suspicious activity reports, or SARs, to the authorities. Help us understand what banks are actually obliged to do when submitting an SAR.
From country to country, because it's a legal requirement, which is defined by national law. And basically, it says that banks have to file a document if they see something unusual or something suspicious in a certain payment request. So transactions where you kind of say, well, there's something fishy here. There's something doesn't sound right. It doesn't look right. Again, it varies across countries. And this has to be reported to the authorities. Then it would be the task of the authorities to follow up. Now, the banks, they can still go ahead unless they know or unless it's obvious that there is something illegal about this transaction. So, for example, if there's a sanction in place, for example, North Korea, you cannot send money to North Korea, period, end of discussion. But if it's only suspicious and there is not really any proof that something is wrong, to my best knowledge, I'm not a legal expert, the banks can go ahead, but they still have to report it to the authorities. Now, the question is, how quickly do they report it? And again, there's also variation across banks. Typically, it has to be done within 30 days. Some banks are just much, much slower. Also, on the regulator side, on the authority side, there doesn't seem to be enough follow-up on these reporting of suspicious activity reports. And just to make one thing clear, I mean, not all of these suspicious activity reports refer to illegal transactions. Some of them might be perfectly legal, perfectly legitimate. It is just that they raise a certain flag. And among these suspicious activity reports or suspicious transactions, there are certainly a certain share, we don't know how much, that is indeed illegal.
Now, Thorsten, in light of these revelations, should more be done? Should there be more rigorous standards in terms of what are actions banks must take when faced with suspicious activity?
Yes, I mean, there should be more done, that's for sure. I think one of the problems is that the regulators over the past 10 years, the 10, 12 years, have focused really on the prudential side of their job. They really have tried to make sure, and with a certain success, that banks are resilient to shocks like the one we are seeing currently, that they are better capitalized, that they are more liquid, that they can react more quickly if a shock like the COVID-19 shock hits. And other parts of the supervision of the oversight have been neglected, I wouldn't say ignored. In some countries, there's not really any clear authority that has the unique task to really go into money laundering, into kind of suspicious transactions by banks. It can be the police, it can be a small office of 2-3 people. And sometimes if you have a small country with big foreign banks, like we have it in a couple of smaller European countries, they might be simply overwhelmed by this kind of work. Now, should there be more done? Yes. For example, in Europe, there have been calls to standardize this, to actually kind of coordinate these activities on the European level, given how easy it is to pass money, how quickly money can be passed from one bank to the next. But of course, there's also more to be done on the international level. It goes on all levels. So it starts with the standards. And again, some of these standards are already out there, but these standards have to be then put into national law. But then again, they have to be also enforced. And I think the last point, the enforcement, I think that's where there's still a big gap between what should be done and what is currently being done.
That said, do you think we'll actually see any policy response as a result of these leaks?
I'm a bit skeptical that too much will happen. I mean, policymakers across the world have somewhat different problems on their mind right now, mostly related to COVID-19, maybe the further volatility with the U.S. elections, trade wars, and so on. So this might not be the top of the of their agenda. Banks themselves, I don't think they will do much unless they're being forced. I mean, again, you have to look at the situation of the banks, especially here in Europe. They're under enormous profit pressure because of the low interest rates. They know these interest rates will be at zero or even negative for the next 10 years. So intermediation business, lending business is not really that profitable right now. Payment business is relatively low risk and attracts fees. So I don't think, and of course can also attract deposits with them from the transaction parties. So I'm not quite sure the banks will really be that eager to really clean up their house and kind of cut themselves off from any of these suspicious activities. So I'm not as, I'm somewhat skeptical much will happen. There should be much more happening, but I think it's kind of the wrong moment right now to really expect much reform to happen. I mean, the important thing is for NGOs, think tanks, for the media to basically keep up the pressure so that in a couple of years, this is still on the agenda and then hopefully something will happen.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Thorsten. That was Thorsten Beck, Professor of Banking and Finance at the Business School, formerly CAS, of City University of London. And I think the FinCEN file leak has really thrown quite a spanner into the works for the global banking industry. And even Malaysian banks have not been exempt from this either.
Yes, I think some banks that were mentioned, like Public Bank and M Bank, I think Public Bank now has come out to say they are obviously committed to ensuring there are no suspicious transactions. Of course, banks in Malaysia, there are some obligations under the Anti-Money Laundering Act and also Countering Financing of Terrorism. They are bounded by those frameworks. And I think Bank Negara has already stepped up on this, right? For example, even transferring money via online platforms, there are a lot of restrictions in terms of the amount and what documents you need to share.
Yeah, but let's also be fair. I mean, I think Thorsten said earlier, right? Suspicious does not mean illegal. And what they have done, especially I think earlier this week, we saw JP Morgan come out with a statement saying that, we did inform the Treasury Department about these things. So we are alerting them to suspicious activity. It's on their part to take action if they deem it worthy. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out because stock prices of some of these banks have been hit quite hard.
They have. So we'll be watching this situation quite closely as well. But right now, we're about to head into some messages. And then up next, we're speaking with Dr. Hamidin Abdul Hamid, Research Fellow at the Ilham Centre on our local political manoeuvres and machinations. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.